Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, where we're hearing our three oral arguments this morning on Zoom.gov. It is January 26, 2022. Marshall, will you call the second case?
Our next case is A200716, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Terrell Edward Tramble, Appellant.
Just a few reminders before we dive into hearing from you. First of all, the way we're operating on Zoom is very much like we operate in our physical courtroom. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your argument, and counsel for appellant, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you want to use it. I'd ask you to introduce yourself each time you begin, because we are making audio recordings of this, which will be available on our website. So that will help listeners remember who is speaking when. If you have any technical difficulties, and I must say we haven't experienced many recently, but if you have them, let us know. We'll stop and try and help you, because we really do want to hear everything you have to say. And also note, there is a clock with your time in one of our Zoom corners, so keep track of that as you begin your arguments. And with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, may I please the court. Opposing counselman, Ms. Stokes, good morning. My name is Craig Cascarano. I represent Mr. Terrell Tramble as the appellant in this matter. I will try to be brief. Thinking about how I should approach this with the court this morning, I had taken a bunch of notes, but I think I'm going to kind of throw those out the window and simply start this way. I am not unmindful of the fact that, and I have placed this in my brief as well, that the factual circumstances surrounding the case against Mr. Tramble are what I have indicated in my brief, nefarious. I get that. It would be ridiculous for me to say anything other than that. On the other hand, I also indicated in my brief and would urge the court to kind of look at this in a different way, because this is a highly unusual prosecution because none of the five victims testified. This case was solely based upon Facebook communications, ads to the back pages, and the claim that all of those came from Mr. Tramble. The way the government or the state proved this is, of course, they called the Facebook expert.
Mr. Cascarano, Mr. Yes. Cascarano, if I can jump in. I see two separate inferential steps that could potentially be at issue here. And I want to clarify, I think you're only arguing one of them. So I think you're arguing that the circumstances proved are not sufficient to infer identity. In other words, they're not sufficient to infer that Tramble was the person using the phone or the Facebook account. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. So I would you agree then that you're not arguing the second step, which would be whoever's using the phone, right? That I don't think you're arguing that the evidence is insufficient to establish that whoever was using that phone and that Facebook account committed the charged offense, right?
That's totally correct, Your Honor. That's okay. Why I
thank you.
Start the way I started. There's no question that if you look at this in a vacuum, so to speak, and look at the Facebook ads, we don't need experts to testify that these Facebook ads have something to do with prostitution or the promotion of prostitution. That's a given. The $64,000 question is, was it Mr. Tramble that placed all those ads together? And there isn't any, obviously, any direct evidence to show that. The Facebook expert candidly testified that anybody could open up a Facebook account. They can put anybody's date of birth in there. They can put anybody's name. They never found, in fact, a cell phone that directly went back to Mr. Tramble. So I get all that.
If I may, when I was sure. Thinking about this identity question, the part that came front and center to me was the witness who identified your client and said, I believe, said the Facebook pages belonged to him, something along those lines.
Correct.
I mean, and we have to assume the jury believed that witness. Why isn't that enough?
I guess I might disagree with the court that you automatically have to believe him. I think you can judge his credibility or at least take a look at that.
Well, we have to assume the jury believed him when we're looking at
this. Well, there's no doubt the jury believed him because they came back and found him guilty. What I was initially going to say is, yes, I understand that. But this court has to review the evidence in and of itself. And without that witness, they, in my mind, would not be able to even sustain a judgment of acquittal against for Mr. Trammell, because they have no evidence to show that he was the one that was placing these ads. In fact, for example, law enforcement doesn't have any surveillance that he's driving these witnesses or women to the hotels or things like that. So then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, we have a jailhouse snitch who claims that he's knows Mr. Trammell. And that's the linchpin, as I indicated in my brief, that's the linchpin. But I think this court should look at his testimony with a wary eye. I'm clearly aware that the jury judged his credibility. They were able to see his demeanor. I get all of that. But nevertheless, I still believe the court can look at that testimony with a suspicious eye. Beyond that, I'm not one, I know Mr. Judge Bryan knows me well, I'm not one to not be at a loss for words, but it doesn't make a great deal of sense for me to go into this case other than what I've done so far. My brief argument with regard to the petition for post-conviction relief, I understand Judge Cook's order. Judge Cook is one who is highly detail-oriented. I don't ever think I've ever seen an order from Judge Cook that's been less than 5 pages long, single spaced. I get that, but nevertheless, it's our position that the only way in which to ferret out what Mr. Trammell was alleging in the petition for post-conviction relief is have an evidentiary hearing so he could testify and Mr. Martinez testify. Beyond that, I have nothing further. Thank you very much.
Mr. Cascarano, if I could ask you to give us your thoughts on sort of a big picture question when we're looking at the rational hypothesis standard, and we are first looking at circumstances proved and we give no deference to the jury's inferences. The question that I have as a big picture matter is, as you know, sometimes expert witnesses are really making arguments. They're making inferences, right? And trial attorneys know that those experts are almost akin to a closing argument at times, depending on what the issue is. So what is the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court supposed to do with inferences that a witness makes, in particular, an expert witness? Do we treat those as a circumstance proved because the judge has already decided this expert under 702 is qualified and will assist the jury? Or do we treat those as inferences to which we would give no deference?
I actually never thought about that. Clearly, when experts testify, they carry great weight. And clearly, the jury would take account into their testimony, perhaps greater than a citizen. Nevertheless, the experts here testified in kind of a general fashion. In other words, what I'm saying is they testified that everything that was going on is consistent with the promotion of prostitution. I don't think there's any dispute with regard to that. I don't believe that to be the dispositive issue. As you had previously indicated, the dispositive issue is identity. And so I don't really have a good answer for you, Judge, with regard to that. My answer is I don't think it's really all that relevant in this case because the experts simply indicated that the activity was prostitution, and we don't necessarily disagree with that. We do have a position that there's no actual evidence, so to speak, or if that's the right word, that Mr. Trammell was the guy putting that stuff on there. And again, the linchpin was the jailhouse snitch. And I think the court can view his credibility with what I called in my brief a wary eye. I hope that answers the question. I guess Jiminy Cricket behind me is telling me it probably didn't answer the question, but I hope it did.
Are there further questions from the panel? No? Well, then anything further, Mr. Cascarano?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Folks, we will turn to you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Sarah Vokes, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney, and I represent the respondent, State of Minnesota, in this matter. This court should affirm because there is sufficient evidence to sustain appellant's 5 convictions and because the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying appellant's petition for post-conviction relief without an evidentiary hearing. At this time, I'm happy to answer any questions that the panel may have for me.
Ms. Vokes, I'll ask you a similar question. Let me back up. It seems to me that if identity is the issue, then at least arguably there's direct evidence of a particular phone number, right? There's evidence from a witness that says he uses that Facebook account. I understand as a respondent, sometimes you just take the way the issue is framed and respond to it. But do you agree that this is circumstantial, or are there potentially pieces that you would characterize as direct evidence as well on identity?
I think that there are a few pieces of evidence that could be considered direct. In my view, I think one of the more compelling pieces of direct evidence is the witness who was incarcerated, who testified that appellant, you know, personally bragged to him about profiting from one of the victim's prostitution activities. So that's sort of like an admission of the appellant that came in that way. I think that is a piece of direct evidence. As far as, you know, some of the other pieces that, like the phone number, I think that it's sort of arguable whether or not there's an inferential step that is happening there. But I think that on the whole, I treat it as a circumstantial evidence case because we certainly don't have direct evidence as to, you know, every element.
Further questions from the panel? Anything further from you, Ms. Vokes?
I can just say to close that, in this view, or in the state's view, there is sufficient evidence, you know, primarily because of this court's standard of review, that credibility determinations are not going to be made by this court, and instead deference will be given to the jury. And in the state's view, there are no rational hypotheses other than guilt that are based on the circumstances that were proved at trial. And that furthermore, this court should reject the claim of ineffective assistance of counsel because appellant validly waived his right to testify and his counsel appropriately handled the question from the jury, and that the remaining issues that were raised were all in the realm of trial strategy that this court should not second guess upon appellate review. And so otherwise, I would rest on my brief and respectfully request that this court affirm.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, any last words? You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Excuse me. No, I have nothing further. Thank you very much.
Well, the court thanks you for your arguments today and the helpful briefing. We'll take the matter in advisement, and a decision will be issued within 90 days. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.